Buenas.
Welcome back to Film Posters, four boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, we'll be doing a recap of our time at TIFF, and our moderator will be me, Anna. So, Toronto International Film Festival, or TIFF for short, celebrates their 46th edition this year. It is recognized as the world's largest public film festival, and it was held from September 9 to September 18. So because of the pandemic, you had the decision to go in person or as digital. Throughout the first couple of days of the festival, there was a lot to handle. There was a lot of hits. There was a lot of misses. The film posters are just going to give you the tea of it. So, for now, what was your experience during the festival? Starting off with Josie.
Well, in terms of my experience at TIFF, I think it's just one thing I keep bringing back up whenever I talk to people about it is that it just felt very mid, mostly like 3-star films in my case, and just a lot of films that, while very visually pleasing, like you can tell that there is a mastery of like photography direction and cinematography and just visuals in general. There was a lack of story sometimes, and sometimes I just wanted more from some of these films. In terms of the festival itself, Gabriela and I were lucky enough to be form part of the Media Inclusion Initiative, so we were able to go to talks, we were able to form part of roundtables with the TIFF official account, so that was very fun. We got to meet some nice people and some other very well-deserving critics. I guess the only other thing was something that we've noticed at many festivals, which is accessibility. Luckily, I was very happy with how the captions for this festival were handled. I did think there was accessibility in terms of that, but it would be mostly something that a lot of people brought up, how hard it was for some people to buy tickets, and then in the cases of people covering virtually, the geo-blocking and the lack of accessibility for films that had world premieres or that were part of the main slate that were not included for virtual attendees. But on the bright side, we were able to see some very diverse films. A lot of the films were directed by women. And this is one of the few festivals that I've noticed that have included a lot of Latin American films. So I'm glad that some people were able to give those love over the main slate films since we didn't have access to them. Because a lot of the times these films do not gain distribution afterwards. So it's up to us to hype them up and try to help them along the way. But yeah, I think we all feel the same way along those lines. So I'm going to let someone else talk.
Gabriela, what was your experience on this festival?
Yeah, so along the same lines as Josie, I appreciated how they had captions for all the films, and it worked. You know, there was no issue with putting on captions, which is great. But yeah, to me, what was very frustrating was the geo-blocking and how last minute they would just make films unavailable for the virtual press. That was very frustrating because I didn't get to see like a lot of films that were on my list. I'm very happy with what I ended up seeing, but I could have seen more. You know, comparing it to the other festivals that we've been lucky enough to cover, I was very disappointed in how TIFF handled virtual press, considering that last year apparently it was one of the best festivals to do virtually. But overall, I saw some great films. And yeah, I like Josie said, since there were like the big films were unavailable to us, I ended up watching a lot of smaller independent films from all over the world, which I ended up really liking. So I did end up discovering some new great films. Certainly can't complain about that. But also another thing that I want to say is that unlike, you know, what Sundance did and South by Southwest, I didn't really get to meet a lot of people at TIFF, because Sundance did their like virtual platform where you could go and meet people, and so did South by Southwest, but TIFF didn't really have anything like that. Which is also kind of sad because part of the fun of going to film festivals is getting to meet people. So I'm sad that I didn't get to meet other people outside of the Media Inclusion Initiative. But other than that, I saw some great films. And at the end of the day, you made the best of it. So I think I made the best out of TIFF, despite everything.
I'm not going to lie. I'm very let down by TIFF. First thing that went wrong, they took away TIFFord. That's right, Clifford. It was going to be TIFFord for us. That's how I knew it went downhill from there.
And took away Clifford and everything was downhill from there.
It all started there. Absolutely. And one of my biggest issues is when you announce, in my opinion, a film's going to be at your festival, I think you should market that better and say, for example, Spencer is going to be exclusive to those who attend in person because you'll motivate more people to go in person, in my opinion. If I would have known, and all those other films that were highly anticipated on my list, and not going to lie, when I heard it was a rumor that they could be there, I applied for them. Not going to lie there. And if I would have been told, hey, they're in person only, maybe I would have considered looking into that possibility. And yes, I saw some good films at TIFF. I'm not going to lie there, I did. I just didn't feel motivated to cover it that much. I covered the ones that looked interesting to me. I didn't go all out like I have in other festivals because I was a little let down. And I do feel when you compare it to South by Southwest, SCAD, Sundance, other festivals which have handled the online, you know, version of a festival, I do feel it was a bit of a letdown. And I do agree that changing the availability of certain films at the last minute was a problem. I was, for example, had on my list The Power of the Dog, and at the last minute changed availability.
Don't talk about it. It still hurts.
No, you know what? I'm going to call it out real quick.
It hurts.
Oh, well. So it was on my list. I was interested in seeing it. And then at the last minute, boom, Canada only. And to change it at the last minute does feel a bit wrong because some of us were preparing for a while, preparing our schedules, making accommodations, and trying to see what would work for us. But to change things at the last minute is a problem. Yes, they had an issue the first day with, I was going to watch Violet that day, and then there was a problem with the platform. They did try to address that. I do like how they tried to address that. Overall, for me, TIFF was like, it was fine. I saw some good films. You try to make the best of it. You do the best you can. But I didn't go as active as I would have had there been more films I was interested in. Maybe that's in part my fault because I don't take more risks on certain films. But when you're let down in that sense, emotionally, you're kind of feeling like, you know what? I would have gone for a burnout with the film festival. But since some of the things I wanted to really watch weren't there, it's like, well, let's go for the rest. But again, I tried to make the best of it. I saw two films Josie highly recommended to me, and I thank her for that. I had a great time recording a review with Anna, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, I think what was also frustrating about them changing the availability of a film is that they didn't even like send an email to announce it or anything. You found out if you logged into the portal and saw it that it had changed. So like we weren't even informed unless you checked the portal. Because I remember that happened with The Power of the Dog. I found that because someone posted it on Twitter.
Yeah, so as for me, I agree with you all. When I first heard of the list of the films that they were going to give out in the festival, I was really excited. There were some specific films that they are on my list from this year that they were going to give out in the festival, such as Last Night in Soho. I was very motivated, and they just kept, you know, keeping it in a secret in a way, not telling if it's going to be like an in-person event or digital. And they just left it a la intemperie until last minute. And honestly, the motivation like to try to cover this festival was a little wary in a sense, because the movies that I highly anticipated, not only Last Night in Soho, but other films, they weren't accessible to us that were attending digital festivals anymore. And then we have the geoblock situation, which kind of sucked, because then the movies that, if it wasn't in person, the other films that they were also anticipated, they were geoblocked, just such as Petite Maman was geoblocked in our region. It kind of sucks, to be honest, but we of course try to find the best of it, and I found some hidden gems. There were a lot of films directed by women. I love that, especially in horror, which we will get in really soon. And another thing that I really loved is how it was accessible, in a sense that all of the films have subtitles. Thank you. Because I love watching movies with subtitles on. And if I remember correctly, that was a big problem with other big festivals, that they didn't have that kind of accessibility.
Yeah, I definitely think transparency would have helped a lot more if they do go virtual again, which I'm not sure if they will. No one knows at this point. But if they do, yeah, they should be a little more transparent. I do think the geoblock's an issue. Like Gabriela said, we found out, not through an email, by going on there and being like, it is now no longer available. And we're like, con permiso.
That was so funny, because so many of us that did the media inclusion, like the three films that we were looking forward to, most of us were like, wow, this aged a little poorly.
Yeah, literally the three films that I put were Power of the Dog, T10, and Mothering Sunday, and I only got to watch Mothering Sunday.
I think we can go into our picks from the festival.
Okay. So now, the posters have seen more than 12 films during the course of the festival. However, we're only going to talk about three. But if you want to check out what other films they have seen, be sure to go to their letterbox or their official Twitter thread of the festival. Now, to kick us off, Juan, what were your top three of the festival?
I'm going to out myself first. I did not watch 12 films. Like I said, I was not very motivated. I saw 10. Got a nice, even 10. First off, I would like to make an honorable mention, and that is The Guilty, directed by Antoine Fuqua, which Anna and I had a bomb time recording that review in person. It was like the first time we got to review something in the same room. You just had to be there. You had to be in the room where it happened. It was hysterical.
Let's just say that Jake Gyllenhaal needs some agua de sal.
Oh. Fool, he does. So yeah, check that out on our YouTube page. It's a lot of fun. And yeah, my top three, all directed by women. Could you expect any less? I mean, come on, superior gender, superior director. Let's be honest. So my number three was a film I know someone in this podcast was highly anticipating, and it's called Petite Maman, directed by Celine Sciamma. All right, so Celine Sciamma, you've done it again. Constantly raising the bar for men to try to keep up with you, knowing they never could. So what I love about Petite Maman was that she manages to do in little less than 75 minutes what a lot of people can't always do with an hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours. And that's explore the grieving process. It was a beautiful thing to go through. You got to see it through the innocence of a child who sees everything but tries to understand just as much. I thought it was a very emotional movie. It hits deep when you think about it, when you start analyzing certain scenes, and when you get to the ending, it packs a punch, and it's quite moving. The cinematography, oh, sensational. It was beautiful. I couldn't stop looking at the details. There's a scene with the it's not a campfire, but it's like a little tent they made out of sticks. Josie, I think you remember that scene in the woods.
Yeah.
That scene, that when you get to see that camera shot, Lord, it was fantastic. It's one of the images used to promote this movie, and it is beautiful to see. I would have liked to have seen this in a theater. If this comes to a theater in Puerto Rico, I would like to see it in that theater to get that experience. And it was, again, it's a beautiful movie. It's easy for the viewer to be drawn into the story. You don't want it to end, but I think that's the point of the movie, which, love to see it. It's honestly such a great film. I kept thinking about it even after I saw it. Fantastic. If it comes to your area, when it does, go see it. Trust in Celine Sciamma. That's what I say. And with that, we move on to my number two pick. This one, also recommended to me by Josie, called The Mad Women's Ball, directed by Melanie Laurent.
Yeah.
This was a genuine surprise for me. I trusted Josie when she recommended it to me. But what was surprising was I didn't know much about the plot. So I went in kind of cold. I knew little details, but not enough to really piece it together. So when I was watching it, I was like, this is incredible what they're doing in this film. This one's a little longer. It was like 2 hours and 12 minutes. But for me, it kind of floated by for the most part. I thought it was incredible. It was brutal. It was a brutal look at the physical, emotional, and mental torture women endured during the 19th century. And they went through that because they were labeled hysterical, which when I didn't know this was based on a book either. So there was a lot of things I didn't know about this film that once I started looking up details, I was like, this is making me like this a lot more. I like that Laurent, the director, proves that she is a triple threat with her acting. Her acting was so good in this film. The writing, the directing, which I felt was the best part. The actresses in here were great. I was invested. And it made you wonder, for me, it made you wonder whether or not who was actually crazy, who was forced and who was driven to that point because of men. And it explores something that this is a topic that you unfortunately could still see today, I think. In the sense of how men emotionally manipulate women. So this was a very intense film. If the subject matter might be a little too much for you, good to know as of now for you. But if it's not, I highly recommend this. It recently premiered on Amazon Prime Video, so you have to check this out. It is one of the best things I saw at TIFF. So I'm going to move on to my favorite film from the festival, and that is Mothering Sunday, directed by Eva Hewson. Absolutely love this film. Can't wait to rewatch it. It's an engaging film. It's beautifully shot and written. I loved how it navigated that non-linear storyline. Sometimes a film can get lost in those. And this one manages to keep you invested, but also let you know this is the past, this is the present, here's where you're supposed to be. I really appreciated that. I feel it is enchanting as it is sensual. I love the exploration of love and loss. The dialogue and the way it was said was just fantastic. They had me hanging on every word. That's how you know it's great chemistry between the two, between the actors. In this case, Odessa Young and Josh O'Connor. They steal the show. I did not see Josh O'Connor on The Crown. I do not watch The Crown. But after seeing Josh O'Connor in this film, I definitely see the hype. I think he is fantastic. I think Odessa Young, amazing. I like the cast here. I think everyone does a great job. Wow, I saw this one with Anna. And I gotta say, watching this with a group, it hits different. I think Anna can mostly agree to this.
Mira.
Like watching this, you and me, it hits different.
Jesus. Okay. The emotion. Mm-hmm. That every scene vibed out. And I felt attacked.
We went through it, but we were having such a fun time. Because
mm-hmm.
we mm-hmm. saw some TIFF films together. Recommend it. Highly recommend Mothering Sunday. It's supposed to be in Puerto Rico in Fine Arts November 25th, if I'm not mistaken. So when it premieres in your area, especially in Puerto Rico, go check this out. It is fantastic. Right now, it is in my top 10 of the year. I have no idea if it'll stick, but it is definitely a film I will remember. Gotta say, I'm very pleased with that top 3. I definitely think that's a top 3 I will keep thinking about, even when they premiere. So, Highly recommend.
Now, Gabriela, what are your top three of this festival?
All of my top films were directed by women, which very on brand. Very on brand for me. We love to see it. So Juan already mentioned, films that Juan already mentioned are also my top three. So my third film is Petite Maman, directed by Celine Sciamma. Again, I remember Josie saw this film before me because I was working, and then I came home and started watching it, and she just waltzed into my room and sat down to watch it again. Anyways, I loved Petite Maman. It's so different from Portrait of a Lady on Fire, because I really like that there's not, you know, you cry because it's very wholesome and it makes you feel warm and fuzzy rather than heartbreak. So I appreciated that Celine Sciamma did not break my heart. It just made me very happy and it was very sweet and I cried. And yes, I loved it. My second film is called As in Heaven, directed by Tia Lindenberg, and it's a Danish film, and we here know how much I love Danish cinema, and this film I absolutely adored. It is kind of in the same route as Mad Woman's Ball in that it really shows the struggles of being a woman, because the plot is basically this 14-year-old girl whose life changes forever when her mother goes into labor. So it's very heartbreaking. It's a very tough watch, but I absolutely loved it. Like, I didn't cry up until the very end when the end like hit me after I had like finished watching it. I loved it so much. It was so beautifully directed. It has so much symbolism. It was just a wonderful film. And my top film was Mothering Sunday. Are we surprised? No, I remember when Josie saw this film at Cannes, she told me, this film is for you. This film has your name written all over it. And she was right. I loved it. Every single moment. It was great. Like, it's exactly the type of film I like. A slow burn period piece. Yes. Sign me up. It did not disappoint. I absolutely loved it. And I cried a lot too. Again, I just kept crying in my top films, but that's just how it is.
I want to go back for a moment to As in Heaven. It's just that there's just one specific scene where the mother is giving birth, and just that, you know, that shot where she's like screaming in front of her child, that was straight out of a horror film. I was deeply disturbed. I don't know about you guys.
Oh yeah, this film is birth control.
Like, yeah, I literally kept saying that.
Yeah.
This film is the ultimate form of birth control.
Yep. Just watch this movie and you'll never want to have children.
I feel depressed.
Yeah, same. I loved it.
And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor. The easiest way to make a podcast.
So, Josie, what are your top three?
Yes. Okay, so, of course, this is going to be a little bit redundant because they've already been mentioned, so I'm just going to spitball. Of course, Petite Maman, resident Celine Sciamma stan of the posers, so of course I got to mention it. Mad Woman's Ball was my top film of the festival. Right now, I don't know what my top film of the festival is, but it's definitely up there. And for everything that Juan talked about, also, it was just, I just really enjoyed how Laurent was able to capture this with such honesty, but without being exploitative, except there is one scene I did not agree with. But other than that, I really enjoyed the film, the visuals, everything just felt so expertly done. So I'm going to do another honorary mention, which is Montana's Story. Of course, I'm not going to go into it, but it's on Letterboxd. Go forth and find out what it's about. I'll leave you in suspense. Let's get into the top three. So number three is You Are Not My Mother, which I really loved. It's a 93-minute flick directed by Kate Dolan. And if I'm not mistaken, it's a feature directorial debut because, yes, they have done a bunch of shorts with very interesting premises. So most of them do deal with gender dynamics, specifically the position of female identifying individuals when facing society. So it's very interesting to see this, especially a horror film. And considering it was their feature debut, I thought it was so well done. It's like the direction. And I know you mentioned a bit of that when you first, because you saw it before me, Anna. So I could definitely see everything you had mentioned while watching this because I was just so taken aback.
Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, that opening sequence, chef's kiss.
Yes.
Yes.
Like they knew what they were doing. They knew what they wanted to communicate. And maybe it might not be for everybody, but I enjoyed it. It was one of those few moments at TIFF that I was fully engaged. I wasn't multitasking or doing anything else because I really wanted to know what was going on, because I also love the mythology and like the lore of changelings. So I liked how she handled that dynamic, and it just also felt very nostalgic, like with the horror elements. It definitely felt like old school and like classic yet new and original all at the same time. So I really appreciate that. Wow. So these other two picks. Okay, I'm going to start with this one. I didn't know which one, but I love them both. So let's start with Small Body, or Piccolo Corpo, as my second. And it's directed by Laura Samani. It's 89 minutes long. We love that. And yeah, I realized I did not give the summary for the last one, but you're better off not knowing the details going blind. But for this one, it's set in Italy in the 1900s. And my review is literally like, Laura Samani saw Portrait of a Lady on Fire and got inspired. Because this one follows young Agatha's baby, who is stillborn and is condemned to limbo. So Agatha hears about a place in the mountains where infants can be brought back to life for just one breath to baptize them. She undertakes a voyage with her daughter's Small Body hidden in a box and meets Lynx, a solitary boy who offers to help her. They set off on an adventure which will enable both to come close to a miracle that seems impossible. This is so freaking touching. It has some of the best cinematography I saw at the festival. There are some crisp underwater shots. There's a lot of references to Greek mythology and to Roman mythology, which I really appreciated. And again, a lot of the cinematography is very similar to the style of Portrait of a Lady on Fire. So if that's your thing, like visually speaking, this has stunning visual storytelling. And also, again, female director, the lens was very interesting, especially how they had mentioned that the reason they got into the story is because they heard of that pilgrimage that people would do, but it was only men. So she wondered what would happen if at that time a woman had done it. And it does deal again with those gender dynamics and also just the struggle of this woman that just gave birth to a stillborn child, and she's literally carrying her grief around because she has her child in a box strapped to her back. And it's just so heartbreaking yet so beautiful at the same time. And I'm like, oh, everybody needs to watch this. My number one, which I made Gabriela watch, and I still don't know. This is my number one film of TIFF. It feels like I should be, but I also feel bad betraying Mad Woman's Ball. So I think they're up there. So this is Morina. It is directed by Antonietta Alama Kusijonovic, and it is 95 minutes. And it follows a teenage girl who decides to replace her controlling father with his wealthy foreign friend during a weekend trip to the Adriatic Sea. Or Adriatic Sea.
Adriatic Sea, yeah.
Yes, and this film is messy, and I love it. I love mess. I love chisme. I love bochinche. I was gasping. I felt like I was watching a telenovela. It just gave me that vibe. But also, again, female director, it follows this young woman that is trying to come of age under the puppeteering oppression of her controlling abusive father. and it's just her trying to come into her own. And then, of course, it deals with this usual story that we've seen told time and time again, where it's like this specific dynamic is interrupted by an outsider. And we see how these people start to adapt to this outsider coming in and changing that dynamic, and how everything begins to crumble, essentially. And I don't know, I just really liked her character, like Julia. It's just so symbolic. It's so nice. And it's heartbreaking at the same time and impactful. And just, again, to see her come into her own. And honestly, like at some points, I'm like, this girl is so brave by standing up to her father so much. And just seeing their dynamic, especially how it builds up to a climax. And how you do get to see that freedom in a sense, but it is an open ending. So you're just left hoping for the best. And yeah, if there are films that I'm going to recommend, it's definitely those, because wow, cinema.
Yeah, I remember when Josie finished it, she told me, so I saw this film and I loved it. It's my first 5-star film, and Scorsese produced it, so go watch it. That's all.
Yeah, it was like I knew the cards to play to get you to watch it. I needed someone else to watch it.
And I did, and I really liked it. It was beautiful.
I mean, again, that one and Small Body, like the underwater shots. I'm like, I keep trying to praise Murina, but then I'm like, but Small Body, that sequence underwater also made me cry. So, yeah, just watch both. Yeah, I wish I could, like, I keep talking about these films as if they're God's gift to Earth. And just a little note that for any of the films that we recommended that are not available, just estén pendiente to our Twitter specifically. So if we find out anything about distribution, we will let you know. What about you, Anna?
So my top three is not that, this is the first one, the one that I really, really loved. Rather than, I just don't want to like put it in, you know, first, second, and third. So I'm just going to say the three ones that I liked. So the first one is Dashcam, directed by Rob Savage. And for those that don't know, he actually directed the film Host, which is available to stream on Shudder. I think that the best way I could describe this movie is a bloody mess. Basically, it's about a chaotic online streamer, analyst, anarchist behavior triggers a nonstop nightmare in this green life fright fest. So basically, we follow this hateful character. This character is really politically incorrect, and in today's political climate, it is wrong, in a sense. So she just like gets a kick out of pissing off people, you know? And in one of her live streams, she just stumbles upon something that she shouldn't have, and it just goes downhill. I personally found it very hilarious. I like the dark humor in it. It is gory. It is very sarcastic, and I don't know, I just got a kick out of it, about this hateful character just going through a lot. And in a sense, she was still kind of positive about it. And I watched this with Juan, and he saw me, and it's like one of those moments when I'm watching a film with Gabriela and she's like, why are you laughing at this?
I was terrified in that moment because you were smiling and I was hiding in my hoodie because I just saw a scene I did not want to see. And you were there laughing. You were laughing. You were vibing. And I was there getting traumatized. It was an experience, though. I liked watching it with you.
The film was definitely an experience. The most fun I had throughout the whole festival. And again, I just had a really good kick out of all of this.
And for found footage, horror can be very hit and miss. This one, it may not have been for me, but I can admire what they tried to pull off.
Definitely. And, you know, sometimes found footage is a hit or a miss, but I thought this was hot, like, it is a hit, especially it mixes social media and technology because it is about streaming. And it gives you a lot of Easter eggs throughout the stream, especially on how the movie is going to shift. And I thought it was really fun finding that out before it actually happens. And also, I kind of loved how the girl, she was rapping the whole ending credit scenes of every person that worked on the film. And I just thought it was hilarious. So I had fun watching this. I know it's going to have a lot of mixed reviews, but yeah, that is just me.
Yeah, it definitely has an audience. But when I saw her start, when we saw her start rapping, we were like, yo, Addison Rae is watching this being like, when can I get a film like this?
When is my time to shine?
Exactly. It was like that TikTok girl that you know is going for the clout. So she's like, what is an obnoxious way for me to get everyone to keep watching? And that's what she was doing. Like, she was trying to feed the frenzy. Little did she know she was also playing with her life. But that's, I think that's the point of the movie, too.
Yeah, because she just didn't have a care of the world. She didn't care what happens to her friend.
She was such a bad friend.
Or what happens to herself. She just wanted to have those views and keep singing, you know, but oh well.
Did it for the clout.
The next one, it is not a movie. It is the first time that TIFF showcases a TV show. And it is called Hellbound, directed by Jong Sang-ho, which he was the one that directed Train to Busan. So, what's about? It's about unearthly beings deliver bloody condemnation, sending individuals to hell and give rise to religious group founded on the idea of divine justice. So, we got a chance to see 3 episodes. I thought it was really entertaining. It was really fantastic. It hit all the key points that I like when it comes to a TV show, especially in the horror genre. It is really thrilling. It is gory. It mixes. And it also has a little bit of police procedure. And I can't say that much other than it is really gory, so beware those that they can't, like, stomach it. But what I found thrilling is just the fact how just monsters came out of nowhere and they judge people and basically, like, bring them to hell. And it is, you know, that investigation between the police and the religious group as to how is this happening. And it's really interesting how the series is unfolding. Again, it is just 3 episodes that they gave off, and it ended on a major climax, and I want to see more. So I know it's gonna be for Netflix. I don't know which is when it's available, but when it does, I'll be sure to finish the series. Now, the next one, it is a film. And it's a film that it actually has a lot of mixed reviews with critics. And it is The Electrical Life of Louis Wayne. I really like this film. And I know it's a biopic, but it also does mixes. It also does mix with romance. And I was really fond of the quirkiness between those two. And it was really engaging for me. And I personally didn't know who he was until now. And I just found so, like, interesting his life and the journey and how he uses art to express himself and such. And now the movie per se, yes, I get why it could have mixed reviews. There's also a lot of technical stuff that we have to like keep in mind. The production design was really lovely. The cinematography, there were some specific shots that they just look straight out of a painting. And I think that was the purpose of it. And also, Benedict Cumberbatch's performance was really great. And I have no complaints with this film. Honestly, I was really engaged. You could ask Juan. I was like literally watching. Like Juan was talking to Rafael Angel, and I was like, shut up, people, I'm watching the movie right now. And I was so fond and awed by it.
You were glued to that screen. You were invested. I hadn't seen you been invested in a film like that for TIFF like throughout the whole time we watched films, even more than Dash Cam.
And I was just really invested on their relationship.
Yeah.
I know it was going to be downhill for there, but I was enjoying the moment. Okay.
You were rooting for the introverted cat lovers. Like, you were rooting for them. It was a very cute romance. I
don't expect it to see Anna so invested in a film that's, you know, a drama with romance and wholesomeness.
I wasn't either. And definitely it is a film for cat lovers too.
Oh yeah.
Is there any honorable mentions that you would like to say, posters?
I guess the other one I'd like to talk about that I think most of us had the chance to, hopefully, is Encounters.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which not a lot of people, might not like it, but I will say Riz Ahmed, he makes the film, his performance is great, and I would recommend you watching it just for him. And like a lot of critics did like it, so I wouldn't say it's don't go in. You might like it. There are some mixed reviews, but like most of the critics did enjoy it. Has a 3.1 on Letterboxd, so overall good film. Has a touching message about the just medical care in the United States as a whole, and the way we treat our veterans, and a little bit of that apocalyptic dread and existentialism and all that. So I'd recommend it because Riz Ahmed was great.
He's always great. He always understands the assignment.
Yes.
He does. And I also like how I love the third act and how it ended. It surely like gives you an emotional punch.
Yes.
I mean, one of my honorable mentions, we already talked about it in the episode, which is Mothering Sunday. I thought it was really central. It has stunning cinematography and great production design. And I just think that Odessa Young and Josh O'Connor are the highlight of the movie. The other one that I want to mention is Aloners. No, I wasn't that invested throughout the first and second act. However, something happens in the third act that kind of resonated with me, especially there's this one scene that I think most people have done, and it's something that just left you thinking more about. And yeah, it is about loneliness and isolation, you know, and how you battle with it. And I thought the way that it handled the subject was really, in a way, it was subtle but powerful. So I want to highlight that one. Oh, and it was directed by a woman. We love that.
So one of my highlights is actually a short film called The Syed Family Xmas Eve Game Night, which I saw with Josie. And it was so much fun. I wish they would make a feature length film out of this short, because it was just so adorable and so funny. So it's basically the story: a young queer Muslim girl brings her girlfriend, who's Puerto Rican, to meet her family for the first time during their Christmas game night. So it was a lot of fun. I loved it. And I think more people should talk about it, because it was one of the best shorts at the festival. And hopefully we get to see a full feature, because it was just so good. And I truly want to see more of these characters and their family interactions.
Well, that's all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Also, it's still Latinx Heritage Month, so please make sure to check out our Elle article for Elle Magazine on the 40 Latinx films you should watch year-round, recommended by us, the Posers. I will not stop talking about it. Where can they find you, Posers?
No, we will never shut up about the article. It is our baby. So, you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia53 and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia.
You can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me at The Josie Murray on Twitter and Letterboxd. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.